Welcome. You're listening to Latin Waves with your hosts, Sylvia and Stuart Richardson. Latin Waves is a syndicated show produced in the studios of CJSF Radio in Burnaby, BC. Latin Waves is more than just hot rhythms. This is a show about community, about creating a culture that is inclusive and based on fairness. Because everyone deserves dignity, respect, and has something to contribute. A new world is possible, and it all starts with us.
And I realized that this sacred landscape is really more of a very scarred and scared landscape. And it was just the kind of reality of the depth of the suffering that was ever present that really reawoken my political consciousness.
That's the voice of Dr. John Seuss. On this edition of Latin Waves, we speak to Dr. Seuss about his experience going to the Holy Land for a pilgrimage, and how that experience turned him into an activist involving himself with the coming Canadian flotilla to Gaza. So stay tuned.
They're building a wall between friends, a wall that justifies any means for their ends, a wall between Semites, rich and poor, brothers and sisters from not so long before. Many feet thick and 20 feet high, no one can look through it and into the eye of a person you might know, to whom you might confide, now just a stranger on the other side. They're building a wall between water and land, so we can eat fruit, they can eat sand. A wall to make sure that our orchards will grow, and our kids can get fat and not need to know of the cities in ruins and the children in fear that your fathers and brothers in tanks might be near. A wall to keep quiet that which you fear most, so you don't have to listen to your grandfather's ghost. They're building a wall between future and past, a wall to keep distant the chambers of gas from the bulldozers' gunships and the tears of a child. Dignity, love, and honor defiled, reality from your facts on the ground. A wall to keep distance the terrible sound of the houses that crumble and the children that die. A wall to keep separate the truth from the lie. They're building a wall, and at such a cost, land, money, and safety, and all the lives lost. A wall made of brick, but bricks can be broken when the people of Zion have finally awoken and said, no more walls, no more refugees, no more keeping people upon their knees. And in the history books will someday recall, before apartheid was ended, they were building a wall.
That was the incredible David Robick's That song, They're Building a Wall. Every time I hear that song, I'm moved by that song, because I think of all the walls of prejudice, of racism, of that divides us and make us distant from the sufferings of so many. Someone who is not alien to the suffering of others, someone who is seeking to make a difference, is Dr. John Suess. He's a clinical psychologist based in Vancouver, BC. Prior to his current focus addressing Palestinian human rights issues, John worked as a health psychologist in the area of organ transplantation, helping patients cope with the stresses of life-threatening medical conditions. He is someone who is very familiar with the trauma and suffering of people and has recently become very involved with Building Bridges, a group in Vancouver who is sponsoring public education forums on the Palestinian-Israeli conflict and doing awareness and fundraising for the soon-to-leave Canada boat to Gaza. Very privileged to have you on our program, John. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, thanks very much for having me. It's great to be here.
Now, most people in Canada either hear about Palestinian as an issue that has some geographical scent. You know, there are some places that are just violent, and it seems there's this naturality about it. The media reports that the Israelis are constantly defending themselves against violent militants. What changed your view, or how did you become involved and concerned about the Palestinian issue?
Yeah. Well, okay, Sylvia. So, you know, prior to this, I had for quite some time, I had a long-standing interest in the role that travel can have in terms of fostering psychological growth and deepening our spirituality. Really, the whole idea of pilgrimage. I mean, it's an old kind of concept, but really, I think mindfully traveling to places that are what could be called sacred landscapes can have a deep impact on how we see ourselves and how we see others. And it was within that context, really with the aim of kind of moving beyond our isolated sense of self and perhaps peeking into kind of a deeper reality where we feel a sense of connectedness to really the larger totality, this kind of sort of peak experience, if you will. Really within this context, I thought that Easter was coming up, my birthday was aligned with this time last year, and so I would go to the Holy Land. And so I went there with the intention of walking the Nativity Trail, which is a long-distance walk, 160 kilometers from Nazareth to Bethlehem, and to see the sacred landscape. So really amidst this kind of notion, this narrative of walking in the Holy Land, was I suddenly thrust into the current reality, and I realized that this sacred landscape is really more of a very scarred and scared landscape. And it was just the kind of reality of the depth of the suffering that was ever present that really reawoken my political consciousness, I guess. And, you know, once you see the degree of suffering there and the degree of injustice, I just felt compelled to address it in whatever way I could. And essentially, that's what it is. You know, I mean, I just saw the the harshness, like the song, David Rovich's song, The Wall, that's part of the scarred landscape. I mean, how is it permitted to have an 8-meter-high wall that just kind of snakes through land that's not even on the border between the so-called green line, you know, the established border of Palestine-Israel? It actually snakes into and annexes, steals, basically, expropriates Palestinian land. What is the justification for this? It's illegal by any measure, and yet the construction is there. It's continuing. Landscape is scarred by what else? Well, the settlements. I mean, these are massive colonial cities. They're not little dots of a few people here and there. Imagine, Sylvia, you're walking through a desert landscape, and all of a sudden you think you're seeing a mirage. But no, this is not a Southern California suburb with carefully manicured lawns and beautiful palm trees and swimming pools. These are Jewish-only racist settlements on occupied territory, land that was stolen from the Palestinians. And where are they living? Well, same place where I stayed, in a refugee camp where there's no water, or if there is, it trickles every so often. It's arbitrarily turned off and on. Why? because they're not accessing their own water. The Palestinians don't have right for their water. Only, what, 20%? 80% fills the swimming pool next, I wouldn't say next door, but, you know, across the way. And you begin to see this injustice, piled upon injustice, the anger, the frustration, and I thought, this is impossible. Why don't we see this in our newspapers on the front page daily? You know, I mean, you can hear my voice. I mean, I just got so stirred up by this because to me, and I thought I was a fairly well-informed, you know, person up on political events, current affairs, as it were, but the degree of distortion of the narrative there was really mind-blowing. So that was it. I mean, it shifted my perspective from walking as a pilgrim amidst the sacred landscape to seeing a scarred, and then, of course, a very scared landscape. That's the other shift. And as a psychologist, what I saw everywhere was the traumatization of living under the occupation. You know, post-traumatic stress, anger, fear, the humiliation. I mean, imagine the humiliation that a 75-year-old lady, who I saw, was being harassed because she wanted to go to the next village. But there was a blockade there. There were 17, 18, 19-year-old kids with guns pointing at her and saying, let me see your papers, in this rude and dismissive way. What is the purpose of that? Do we need to humiliate this lady who was born on that land, what, 40, 50 years before this kid was even born? I mean, there's just this ever-present sense of military control and occupation that needs to end. The settlements need to be removed. The wall needs to come down. And there needs to be an ending of this current atrocity. So that's really what brought me into it. I mean, I like to say I went there as a pilgrim and came back as an activist, you know, just to try to change what we see in that scenario.
I want to talk a little bit about that, because while we sometimes are filled with images, right, our world does have images, as you point out, we are distant from that from that pain, and we don't see what's in front of us. Mm-hmm. Also, I think that the fact that it's always reported in the media as the aggression against Palestinians, the constant military aggression, and also the bulldozing of their homes, always reported as a measured response, by the Israeli military to protect the Israeli settlements. But we never talk about how those settlements came to be, whose homes were bulldozed to make room for those settlements. And, you know, we never talk about this open prison where people are not allowed to have the free flow of food. And so here's where I think your work is of great importance. So I wonder if you could talk a little bit about your work, because not only did you become aware, you became engaged, and you're now doing something about it. Organizing a boat to Gaza has both a material effort to ameliorate the conditions there, but it is also a political statement that says no people should be allowed to starve because of political ideology.
Right, right. So that's the other part of the work. That's quite correct. So the other part of the work is, a civil society response to the incredible injustice and harshness that we see in Gaza, where people are living, 1.5, 1.5 million people are essentially living in what has been described the largest open prison, where there's a complete siege, a blockade. People are not allowed to move in. People are not allowed to move out. Goods do not go in and out. And this has been maintained for years now. And as we know, in winter of 2008, 2009, the Operation Cast Lead was a massive, really, one might say a massacre of 1,400 people in Gaza. Now, imagine picturing this where you're not even allowed to escape because the borders on all the borders were shut down. And so there you have a helpless population with phosphorus bombs raining down on them, schools, police stations, hospitals were being totally wiped out. And this is to allegedly prevent Israel from the Qassam rockets. Well, what a disproportionate response. I mean, I'm not saying that it's okay for Hamas to send Qassam rockets, but what is the reality here is that since 2001, there have been 28 Israelis killed by these rockets, and in that two-week period, there was 1,400 Palestinians killed. And in that operation, the so-called cast lead, there were 14 Israelis who were killed, 14, as opposed to 1,400. And three of those were friendly fire. So it's an amazing disparity and a complete unequal conflict. So the boat, anyway, sorry, I'm rambling a little bit. But the purpose of the international flotilla, there are 10, perhaps more will be added, boats whose purpose is to deliver humanitarian aid to the besieged Palestinians residing in Gaza. And it's also a powerful symbolic gesture to say that even though our government, for example, our Harper government, may see that we must accept everything Israel says unconditionally and unquestionably, the people of the world have decided that this is unacceptable. The degree of the suffering, the degree of the humiliation, and imagine a policy that consciously is created to create people's hunger, to increase their hunger, so that the idea is, this twisted logic, is that by making people uncomfortable in Gaza, they will somehow rise up and depose of the Hamas leadership. This is crazy. I mean, this is insane. You know, if the psychologists were to look at this, they would say this is some kind of diabolical plan that is absurd. It makes no sense. But yet that's the official policy, to starve the people into rising up in revolution. So the boat is designed, or the flotilla is an international flotilla, to bring humanitarian aid and also to say enough is enough. This siege is illegal according to every UN law resolution passed. It's seen as being illegal, and it's a collective punishment, and yet it continues unabated for years now. So we really must stop it. And that's the aim, and that's why there are now 50 Canadians who have decided to go on board. And I say different nationalities are joining. Belgians, two of my friends may be listening. Bonjour, Philippe. Bonjour, Annick. They're on the boat. And Danish, New Zealand, South American boats. So there's people really from all over the world who are uniting in a desire to end this siege.
And I just want to say that, you know, it's a culture of fear, right? On May 31st, 2010, the Israeli commandos boarded the ships that were bringing food, you know, on Mavi Marmara.
Yeah.
And, you know, the people who were killed on that boat were unarmed civilians. But what it was reported was that they were responding to the activist violent resistance. There is clearly a blindfold willingness to accept these claims when we know that the boat was a humanitarian boat, when we know that the boat was carrying supplies and food. Talk a little bit about how you yourself and those who are going on this boat respond to this threat, because it is obviously a threat that lingers.
Right. Well, so there are a number of things. One is that the people on, you know, all of us who are involved with the Canada boat to Gaza are very, very clear in our intent on and our commitment, really, to be nonviolent. And so there will be absolutely no response that could in any way be construed as being angry or violent response, even in face of any provocation by the Israeli Defense Force if they choose to board the upcoming ship. So there is training in nonviolence. There is a deep philosophical commitment that what we are here to do is not to in any way provoke any kind of violence, because we know that violence is not an appropriate means of conflict resolution. All it does is just escalates the spiral of violence. I mean, we see that in Gaza. We see that in the West Bank. 14-year-old boy throws a stone out of anger and frustration of the life under the occupation, and he is responded to by a barrage of tear gas canisters. That then results in more stones, and before you know it, you're back into perpetuating the Middle East conflict. So this doesn't work.
I do think we need to make a clear distinction, though, between the boy who throws a stone and an armed military trained official who kills.
Yeah. That's the point, though. You know what I mean? So this idea of self-defense, I mean, how can a military person trained say that he was threatened by either someone on the boat who's carrying a sack of flour or someone who's picking scrap metal up? It's completely unjustified to have this, even a notion of needing to respond militarily. You know, and that was one of the other things that, speaking of which is a bit of a detour, but one of the other things that affected me so profoundly when I was walking the Nativity Trail amidst the peaceful fields is that one day we were not permitted to walk from one village to the next, my little group of four, really. And so I started wondering, well, why do we have to take a taxi around this village? Well, as it turned out, two 14-year-old boys were shot and killed that day. And it just overwhelmed me again with the inescapable reality that this is something that's ever present. Why is it ever present? Because people kind of said, oh, this happens all the time. That was the response, a kind of resignation to the inevitable violence that is really part of their, you know, day-to-day experience. So that's what's going on. I mean, people are fed up with the distorted news media coverage of what's going on there. People are tired of the suffering, and by land and by sea, concerned civic groups are trying to, in whatever way they can, to redress this apartheid colonial situation that's there. For example, I will be going back in October to help with the olive harvest. Why the olive harvest? Because the olive has been an ancient symbol of Palestine, but olive groves are now behind, in many areas, behind the separation wall, separating people from their own fields. And the olive groves, as a symbol to the Palestinians, are now being destroyed in a callous, almost like a psychological warfare. 3,000 olive trees belonging to Palestinians were vandalized just this year, since January, by the settlers. There's no purpose of that. It's not a security threat. What are you going to do, hide in an olive grove that's 200 years old? No, it's just to show furthermore the subjugation, the control, that this is my land from the settlers' point of view, because these are settler-mediated violent acts. That's another whole topic that needs to be addressed.
I just want to point out the importance then of people not only being aware as you are, informed as we must constantly seek to be, but also engage. So tell us, how can people participate in this resistance to overt violence, in this resistance to a culture of terror that seems to have more than permeated our lives and our culture?
Yeah, well, yeah, great question, Shubhi. I mean, you know, certainly education is one start, and is an important way, because we're not being educated. We're being misled. Just the coverage of Netanyahu's speech is dishonest. Making great sacrifices and generous sacrifices to the Palestinians. What are those sacrifices? To deny them a sense of nationhood? And create a military presence in the Jordan Valley, and to give back a few specks of land that you stole in the first place. I mean, it's a constant misrepresentation of information. There's independent Jewish voices, INJVCanada.org, CanPalNet.ca, the Canada Palestine Support Network. So locally, we're lucky. There are a lot of impassioned, concerned individuals who are fighting this. There's the Canada Boat to Gaza website, tahrir.ca, named after the square in Cairo, Liberation. We've named our boat after that in honor of the people's struggle there to throw out years of oppression. And hopefully this Arab Spring will also give the Palestinians in the West Bank, East Jerusalem, and Gaza a taste of freedom for their own lives there.
Thank you so much for being with us. Tell us again how people can contribute by donating or by joining and deciding to come on the boat. How do they get involved?
Well, the easiest way to do that is to, as we all say, visit us on our website. It's Tahrir, TAHRIR.ca, and that's the website for the Canada Boat to Gaza. There will be information there as to how to donate, how to be participating in it, how to be kept apprised as the voyage unfolds, and some of those other websites I said also in terms of accessing information is really great to be aware of what's unfolding there.
Thank you again for being with us.
Yeah, great. I'm really very happy to have this chance to talk to you and your audience. All the best. Thanks.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
We have come to the end of our show, Latin Waves. Latin Waves is a weekly syndicated program produced and broadcast from the studios of CGSF Radio in Burnaby, BC. The program is available free of charge to campus and community stations across Canada and the U.S. For more information about our work or to support our efforts, please visit our website at www.latinwavesmedia.com. Bye for now.